Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing quite well.
Good.
And ready and raring to solve another problem.
Another problem, another day.
You know, it's a victory if we just don't cause any trouble. These days, you know, there's always one popping up. You try to solve one, and they come back with two more schemes that they're going to do to try to undermine what we think is important. But I think there's a little bit of good news today, and the motivations and the understanding is up for grabs, but at least it's moving in the right direction. Most everybody knows about CHOP and Seattle and the independent movement, very libertarian movement. They just took over a block, but not quite libertarian. They took it over, and the city fathers and the police department said, "Oh, okay, you guys want to run your own show? We're gonna let you do it." But they had no way of keeping the welfare state going. They had no way of policing, the violence, and even the mayor. Well, she was going to usher in an age of love, and then there would be no need for police. And yet, lo and behold, the violence has broken out. There is question. And right now, I would say the violence is minimal compared to what's going on in Chicago. But even what's happening in Chicago has to be a result of total anarchy and a total lack of respect for liberty and for property rights. But she now has backed down and said that she wants to work better with them and ease up a little bit on what is happening there. And I think in some ways you can describe it as a victory for sanity, at least a mini victory, moving in the direction instead of more and more government authority and anarchy and violence and just depending on violence and force to bring about changes. The people said, "We don't want all this. This is not our goal. We don't want all this violence going on. We think occasionally a policeman ought to be available." And of course, I guess there was a killing up there, mm-hmm. and they had to go in, and that was not well run because they had already given up some of their services. But the whole idea, is that no matter how long they get away with their independence, they're not going to get away from their dependency on people who are going to be paying the bills, and therefore it's not quite like the independence that our founders had when they left Britain. When they left Britain, they were so happy to have left Britain, they weren't looking for total dependency from the crown. Matter of fact, that's what they fought about. So they immediately knew they had to go on their own. That's not what this is all about. Even though I think it's a step in the right direction that because the people spoke out, the mayor finally had to respond. Hardly can we call it capitulation, but she did have to move. The people's voices were heard to some degree. They wanted a change, and that's a good sign. The people should stand up, and I think we would have less aggressive measures out there, and we might get back to a more sane way of handling coronavirus than giving more regulations and not really understanding what's going on. So I congratulate the mayor for at least moving a baby step in our direction, and I don't know her motivations, but right now that's better than taking another authoritarian step, which some of them are doing. They become more authoritarian if they think, "Oh, the virus is coming back. It's worse than ever." You know, they get ready to increase, the lockdown once again.
Yeah, and it's hard to, maybe it's two chairs instead of three chairs because, she was on CNN back on June 11th when they started setting up this, six square blocks of autonomous zone. They put stuff in the streets and they burned a bunch of stuff down. And she was on with Chris Cuomo, and Cuomo said, "How long do you think Seattle and those few blocks will look like this?" And she said, "I don't know, we could have a summer of love." And now, of course, those words are she's being forced to eat those words because no sooner did they set up this so-called autonomous zone when a guy stepped forward and claimed himself to be the strongman in charge. And he started beating up people, and he started handing out automatic weapons, and people started shooting each other, and there was, I think there have been three shootings at least. One of them was dead, a 19-year-old man was killed. And, the people who are not super enthusiastic about the violent takeover part of a town had to chuckle a little bit because the whole point was we don't need no police. But then when this guy got shot and there was an active shooting, they wanted the ambulance to come in and take him to the hospital. The ambulance said, no, you know, our the way we do things is if there's an active shooting going on, we have to come in with the police. They said, no, you can't. And so they had to throw this guy in a car and take him. They didn't want the police until they wanted the police.
Right. And a little late on it. And well, the system isn't going to work because she talks about love. And that's nice to talk about it, but I can't imagine her understanding much about what that would entail, because what we see is they mix these demonstrations. First, the lockdown is force, and the demonstrations turn into racial strife, and everything is racial. And then they come along, and they don't have a good idea about what property is all about. So they use force to instill it, but I would say once you get into the area of force to determine how people should live and treat each other, they're dealing with hate. With the force, you can't separate the two.
Yeah.
And so it's a nice dream. She may be sincere, but you can predict that just what you described so well will happen, because that's only the beginning. And immediately, of course, they needed some help. These groups that might be able to declare independence, I'd love that to happen. I think that would be one of the best ways to have transition, that whether it's individual sovereignty or community sovereignty or state sovereignty, just say, look, we want out, we'll be friends, we'll work with you, but we don't want to be part of the monolith out of Washington and out of the UN and the IMF and all this stuff. And this would be fine, but that's not what this is all about. This is to make a point, which I think is more involved with guiding their hate toward an agenda that they have, and it's social things. It's Marxism and everything else that they would like to abide by. So, although those words sound good, I think they're pretty far removed from a libertarian approach of independence.
And unfortunately, a lot of libertarians have even been caught up in this idea of defund the police, get rid of the police, because it tracks with what they want without seeing the details. And, you know, we talk about Bob Wenzel a lot, but I think Bob really gets it right. Yes, theoretically, I mean, his view is that we have to look things moving toward liberty or away from liberty. And that's how we should judge really every event, you know, not with these ideological blinders, but whether it does this or that. And his point has been, and I think we would agree with him, that, there are problems with the police, for sure. And you've talked about them for years and years. However, would letting the people who want to defund the police get in charge, would that move us toward or away from liberty? And the reality is it would move us further away from liberty because, as you point out, they are committed Marxists. The head of BLM was interviewed recently where she said, we are trained Marxists. They want to overthrow the system and the family. Openly they say this, but they're probably just pawns in the game of a bigger thing. And this is what Tom Luongo, who we've had on the show before, I think is a pretty astute observer. He puts it in the context in a recent piece of basically this ongoing coup attempt against Trump. Mm-hmm. And the idea to destate, he actually says that the Chaz or the Chop reminds him of the Maidan in 2014, where you had this zone and you had to try to elicit a response from the authorities. And now Trump is taking the bait a little bit. You know, if I have to go in there, I'm going to go in there. I'm not going to let this happen. He doesn't have the right to at this point. He doesn't have the right to. But I think, and Tom would say, and I think he's probably right, that's just what they want. Mm-hmm. They want this thing to escalate. They want Trump to come in and start smashing things up. And they want to turn this into kind of a Maidan, of an overthrow. And he says it's the deep state, and it's an overused term, and it's unfortunate that we sort of use that as a catch-all term, but there is a force, and we know from what John Brennan has done, we know what he was doing with faking the whole Russiagate thing. We know there is a deep state. We see it in the FBI. And something like this, some action like this, is certainly not outside their purview, I think.
No, I think he's absolutely right on this Trump issue, because that motivates the left, and they can use it all the time, and there's hatred toward Trump, and he's going to stand up to him when they hate that even more. The media hates him because he won't put up with a lot of their nonsense, but then at times, a little bit more diplomacy couldn't hurt. But I think that's the big factor, whether it's the coronavirus. Just think, if they would have had more of an approach to coronavirus like they've had with influenza and the other epidemics that we've had, totally different. So this has been different than ever. And it's not because it's more deadly or more people died or anything, but there's been more loss of liberty, more encroachment of our freedoms, the way this was handled. But I think everything is designed to go after Trump. And therefore, they want to be able to blame him if they can make a mess out of this. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But let's just hope there's more people say enough is enough. The statistics maybe should be challenged, and lockdown has to be challenged. But there's still a lot of people who say, oh, it's coming back. It's coming back. Please come back and lock us up. This whole thing that the lockdown and putting us in our houses, is, we mentioned it yesterday, about it's like a concentration camp, it's the use of force. It has nothing to do with good science. You know, this whole idea that these demonstrations are motivated by good science and libertarian politics. Unfortunately, we don't have good science, and we don't have a constitutional government where the federal government is involved in only things that they're authorized to do. Then you end up with this mess. But those are issues that aren't debatable. The politicians they've settled it. You know, science has been settled. The science has been settled. The politics has been settled. The power of the state has been settled, and therefore we can't talk about that. And we see Trump as an enemy, not so much an enemy of the state as a willingness to speak out and try to set things straight by talking to him and trying to set a standard for what the media is doing to us. So I think that's a combination. But I do think Longo is right. This whole idea of Trump is a big deal. That's an underpinning of almost everything that happens. You know, probably 95% of everything you're going to hear on regular TV and a lot on the internet. That's what it's going to be. How do we get Trump?
And they'll say, oh, well, he and us, where you're just Trump supporters. That's why you say this. But Longo is not, and neither are we. And here's what Longo writes in his piece. He said, specifically, the U.S. deep state, a major faction within that deep state, is clearly desperate to get rid of Trump, and not for the right reasons, of which there are plenty, right?
Yeah, that's an important addition. He's our friend.
Yeah, that's an important addition. And he talks about Trump losing control of the executive branch, that his own Secretary of Defense doesn't back him on restoring law and order, his own U.S. ambassador to South Korea supporting the BLM movement against the wishes of Trump. But Longo also makes another point, which is important too. He's brought this upon himself, this Maidan that he may be facing. He brought it upon himself because, on the one hand, he's been extraordinarily weak in addressing his own attackers. You know, a lot of tweets, a lot of rhetoric, but he hasn't done anything about the John Brennans of the world and the FBI people of the world that have gone after him illegally. But while he's done that, he's actually been engaging in similar behavior toward other countries, acting like an attacker. He's too weak against his own attackers, and he's way too aggressive against countries like Syria and Iran and Venezuela. So it's the totally wrong mix of both.
Yeah, and he sort of sends out a confusing message on the Bolton issue.
Yeah,
you know, hires these people, and we want to say, well, under these circumstances, you know, it's not a perfect world. He can't be a non-interventionist, and so he has Bolton come in. Maybe he thinks he has to appease the deep state a little bit, but if that's the case, why stir it up? He gets in there and really can mix it up. And his whole idea is to sabotage the foreign policy, which is, the big thing that he's involved in. And then he turns on him, and then that's a can of worms. And now, in the midst of what's happening with the coronavirus, because personally, I just think that Trump had better instincts about what to do with coronavirus, but the pressures were so great, and I know what those pressures are like, and not many people are thinking along the terms of authority getting to the government, and that's not Trump's favorite subject either, you know, on how much authority a president or executive branch have, how much authority a mayor has, and city councilman. I mean,
or a judge.
I was just thinking the judge of Harris County. It's all overkill.
But yeah, we both read this article in the National Interest today by Daniel DePetris, and it was a really good piece. And we've talked about Bolton a little bit, but his point was that, okay, there's been a lot of high-profile, you know, excerpts from this about, you know, the personal things, the more salacious aspects of Bolton's relationship in the employment of President Trump. But a few things sort of have escaped the headlines, and he writes about a couple of them. He talks about the audacity of Bolton's criticism of Trump's outreach to North Korea, where here is Bolton, former ambassador to the UN, involved in U.S. policy for decades, who doesn't have a lick of success in any way, how we would call success. He would call success something different. His success would be bombs in the air. But he dismissed diplomacy from the beginning. And the other thing that DePetris wrote in his piece, he knew exactly what he was saying when he talked about the Libya model, because the North Koreans understood very well what happened to Gaddafi when he gave up his weapons, his nuclear weapons. They knew it. He said that on purposeful intent of putting a monkey wrench in this outreach, of stopping it. And I mean, that kind of guy on your staff, can you imagine? He viewed the Trump meeting with Putin as a self-inflicted wound. Putin had to be laughing uproariously at what he had gotten away with at Helsinki. What did he get away with, you know? Are we now speaking Russian on the show?
Would that be something like if one of my staff people gave a major speech on why we should be more decent and sympathetic towards the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't you understand that?
Back the Fed.
I think that would get my attention.
Yeah, back the Fed.
There you go. But no, I mean, he has been there to sabotage things, and I guess the only one thing that he and Trump agreed on was breaking the treaty agreement with Iran.
Iran, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And unfortunately, that was one of the few times we don't push those treaties, but if they're there and it's leaning in the right direction, of not facing each other off with nuclear weapons, why not work that out? But that ended, and that made Trump and Bolton happy that happened. But there's a lot of other problems out there. We haven't talked as much about foreign policy. I predict that there will be some foreign policy problems that we will need to address as maybe after we solve all the problems here over coronavirus and all the authoritarian stuff, and get more mayors to back off and say, hey, we don't need to do this. Let's close down the lockdown.
Yeah. Well, you probably heard that they've announced there's going to be three debates between Trump and Biden. So I'm already stocking up on popcorn for that. I'm not into politics, but that might be interesting to watch. But the last thing, I just wanted to follow up on something you touched on earlier, and that is, the coronavirus news. As we know, Fauci is coming before the Democrats in control of the House today. And so you can imagine what he's doing in a rear guard action. He says there'll be no solution until we have a vaccine, which, of course, will make his mentor, Bill Gates, very happy and very well, even more wealthy. But the thing that you're seeing now, and I've seen it twice, I saw it yesterday, I didn't bring it up, and I want to bring it up today, this massive increase of infections of coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I showed the graphic about testing in Texas going way up. Testing in the U.S., 22 million tests in the U.S. so far. Testing way up, so there are more cases. But you have it over and over now. They're blaming it. And Abbott did it too, our governor here in Texas. He blames the increase in case, so-called increase in cases, on young people being reckless. Young people are getting out, and they're going to the beach, and they're going to pubs, and they're being reckless. But I think about that word reckless. Is it really reckless? If you think about you're a young person, you know, say under 30, and you think about the odds of getting, first of all, even catching it, second of all, even getting sick or even knowing you have it, and third of all, dying, your odds are so slim. Is it reckless when you look at the dangers or the threats And so I looked at, and from every number that I can get in Texas, people under the age of 30, there have been less than 20 deaths. And I mentioned this yesterday. We don't know the other circumstances, what have you, but 20 deaths. So these, no one can go out at that age group because it's reckless. But then you look at suicides in Texas. It's a state of 29 million people. In the, 2019, the suicide rate was 15.1 per 100,000 in that age group. And the most recent statistics in terms of numbers I could see in the brief period before we started was about 500 young people between 10 and 24 years old in 2014 took their own lives. So you had 20 people that died from corona. You've got about 500 in that age group, roughly speaking, who die of suicide. And so if you put that in proportion, how can you call these people reckless for not wanting to lock themselves in their rooms, lock themselves in their house, and destroy their lives? So anyway, I do want to also mention, and we had a little technical problem yesterday, we did promise to roll the names and thank personally the people who are super chatters and help support the show. They will roll in the credits after the show, so if you don't see your name, it's because you're not a super chatter and you should be one. And also, I've seen in the comments several people that have talked about suddenly they're unsubscribed to this channel and they knew that they had subscribed. So double check, make sure you are subscribed. If you're not, click subscribe and also hit notifications. You may have to do it every day if they keep unsubscribing you, but we do appreciate you watching the show.
Very good. I want to follow up on this idea of comparing some of these statistics that we hear about, because almost everybody is supposed to be looking at the same statistics and they come up with a different analysis. But I think the comparison should be made, not the one that the fear mongers do. They say, you have to follow the rules, you have to have lockdown, because if you don't, this is what's going to happen. That's where it breaks down, because they have no evidence that what they say is going to happen happens. But what the comparison should be, if there's lockdown and restriction of playing baseball out in an open field and doing these things, the comparison should be is what happens if you don't get that? What happens if you can't get out and be outdoors and get your vitamin D and all these things? And what would it be like? And the truth is you're not worse off. You're better off. Your health is better off. So when you compare it to if you say, yes, lockdown is, that's one of these times when you have to sacrifice liberty to be safe and healthy. And of course, we don't believe that. But even if you did that, you look at it and you say, well, it's not really going to help anybody's health. And also, certainly, let's say it's totally neutral. Let's say there's no difference, and I believe there is. I think you're better off not getting locked in your house or in your nursing home. But what about the issue of liberty, of self-reliance and making your own decisions and getting the bureaucrats involved and getting money involved, getting the deep state involved over some of the arrangements, but also, the medical industrial complex? What about big pharma? What about these people who want to make all the drugs and the vaccines? That nobody compares what the cost is, and the cost is horrendous. So even if it was even Stephen on which way you go on health, it's still terrible, because ultimately there's a disadvantage. It's very costly. And of course, we're quite convinced, at least I'm quite convinced, that the individuals that Daniel described, the young people wanting to go out and take their own risk, they know what the risk will be. This whole idea, they must laugh when the kids must laugh. They're always taking risks. They do crazy things. And they go down and they swim where they're not supposed to swim. And as I recall, I remember when kids used to dive off bridges and things like this. You took your own risk. But now, you see pictures of somebody being arrested, and maybe not so much this week or last week, individuals being arrested, and they're all by themselves on a beach and being fined for it, or people being harassed when they go to church because they won't wear masks. I mean, it just is so horrible that really, to me, the worst part about it is the tolerance for it. Oh, this is it. But what they want, their goal is for us to be obedient and comply and have us so we're prepared for the next emergency. You know, we've had 9/11 was a pretty significant emergency. Now we have coronavirus, and coronavirus won't be around. I think it's not going to be here in the same way, but there'll be something else. So, but it is discipline. It is what the cultural and economic Marxists want. They want to scare people to death. So not so much that they can analyze this, but if they're scared, then their reactions are heard, like they'll just do what they're told. And of course, we'd like people to think it through a little bit better. And up until now in our history, we generally have had that approach. But I would say it's been downhill for the last 75 years or so, especially since the Depression, where people became totally dependent on the federal government, both for safety as well as for health matters. But there is another way out of this mess, and that has to do with looking toward personal liberty and personal responsibility and constitutional law. And I think those results that you can find from that program is much, much better. So we will keep arguing the case here for the Institute, our position for peace and prosperity, by just minding our own business, people taking care of themselves, and apply that to everything, socially, economically, and in foreign policy. Why don't we just mind our own business there, and we might not have these military viruses running around the world protecting our empire. So I think the answers are there, and they're not complicated. It's just a matter of right now, the fear mongers have the upper hand, but we will keep nibbling away at it. And I think what we talked about today is the fact that now we see the mayors backing off a little bit, and I think that's good. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.